See what I said, Ballymore. Okay, let's move on anyway on that note, because the government is being accused of ignoring the science on indoor dining. That's according to the group representing the restaurant industry, the Restaurant Association of Ireland, whose president, Mark McGowan, is on the line now. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Thank you for joining us. Hotels are due to open on June 2nd. Outdoor hospitality is set to resume on June 7th. Why do you feel the government is ignoring the science?
Well, first of all, we very much welcome the guidelines. We've been waiting and waiting patiently. But unfortunately for us, we're not going to be open in line with hotel restaurants, which is what we need. There's nothing in the guidelines to suggest that there's anything different from a hotel restaurant and a standalone restaurant. So the focus has to be now on getting us indoors on June 2nd in line with hotels.
What is the government's view in terms of the difference between indoor hotel dining and indoor restaurant dining?
We've been asking that question and we haven't had a response, so there actually is no difference. I'm a hotelier, I'm a restaurateur and I'm a publican, and I can say unequivocally that there is no difference between a hotel restaurant and a standalone restaurant. Restaurants come in all different kinds of shapes and sizes. Some have more ventilation than others. I'm in quite an old building, so I could tell you quite quickly that although my restaurant is well ventilated, there's bigger restaurants out there that are not in hotels. So it's very unfair, and it's not going to be very viable for a restaurant to be able to serve outdoors if they have small space and they haven't got the facility to do it, you know.
Your industry employs nearly 200,000 people.
Correct, absolutely. There's about 200,000 people employed approximately. It looks as if there's probably about 50 to 60% maybe of restaurants might be able to get open in some way, shape or form, which leaves a huge amount of people still unemployed, unfortunately. And the idea is to get those guys back to work as soon as possible. We're very appreciative of all the support, the financial support that have been given. We're just hoping that they're going to continue all the way into 2022, which is very important. That'll ensure that businesses don't close down and that those jobs are lost for good. So that's where we're at the minute. So focus now, June 2nd, we're calling on the Taoiseach to maybe revise this plan, get everybody back indoors for June 2nd, and we'll go with all the regulations that we need to make sure that our patrons are safe. And we're well capable of doing that because we're skilled and we're well able for it.
Yet, while you're urging the government to follow the science, then you might be aware of a story today attributed to Professor Anthony Staines, who has frequently contributed to this programme, and he's a member of the Independent Scientific Group and of experts, immunologists and others in relation to this. And he's quoted today as saying, Ireland is in danger of getting into what he calls serious trouble again with COVID-19 amid concerns as plans to allow tables at pubs, restaurants to seat up to 15 people, including 9 children. They're saying, the headline basically, we're going back too fast. The plan for 15 to dine at a single table is very risky.
I can only accept what he says because I'm not a scientist myself, but what we have done all the way along here is made sure that we've worked with the government, with the guidelines available to us. But our issue is that we want to know what the difference is. If hotel restaurants are allowed open, well then standalone restaurants should be allowed open, and any other food service establishment for that matter should be allowed open. So it's the discriminatory and bias that is the issue here. So what we want to do is get open in line safely when it is safe to do so with hotel restaurants.
Now, in terms of yourself, you spoke about being a hotelier, and we know that the government has stated, you know, restrictions on overseas travel are going to stay in place in the longer term. How bleak is the outlook for the hotel and hospitality sector?
Well, even if we do get open, like, different areas of the country will obviously do well with domestic tourism. The northeast, where I am, up in Drogheda, needs international tourists. So as soon as connectivity gets back, well then we can ensure kind of a little bit more stability for the sector. And the Boyne Valley is a fantastic region as well, and we're really looking forward to getting international visitors back in. When that will be, you know, that's the big question.
Now, just going back in the generality of things and people, you know, anxious for information, and we're told there'll be no standing at the bar, no live music. Now, I know this might pertain to just pubs, and I think there is a differential between the way hotel bars will be treated and pubs in general, and an 11:30 p.m. curfew. Indoor hospitality must not feature live or loud music. Customers will face that curfew, the guidance says. Multiple tables cannot be booked indoors. No party social gatherings are permitted indoors. Table service only. Physical distancing of 2 meters should be maintained between tables unless there have been mitigation procedures taken. Physical distancing of 1 meter is required between the outer edges of the party. I hope you're busy with your measure, your rulers and all of this. Back of chair to back of chair. Contact tracing, ventilation and enhancing hygiene measures must be adhered to. Measures to control noise levels, as we said, no live music, loud music permitted. Face coverings, masks must be worn by customers at all times other than when sitting at their table. So I presume you put it on when you go to the toilet or whatever. Employees wear face coverings, masks at all times. Patrons must have vacated the premises by 11:30 p.m. And outdoor tables can be 1 meter apart with no time limit. But indoors, the time limits will apply if tables are closer than 2 meters together. I tell you, the logistics behind that for management and staff of restaurants and hotels is going to be quite significant, is it not?
Absolutely. One of the biggest issues we have at the minute is trying to get our staff back, I suppose, and get them trained up. Now, we've been through this, I suppose, last summer, so we're well aware of the guidelines, and not a huge amount has actually changed. So as a hotelier, I will have my restaurant open from June 2nd with all the guidelines that are there that are in place. There's a couple of things that won't suit everybody, I suppose. There's a lot of restaurants. I heard JP McMahon on yesterday. He was saying that he has a 10-course tasting menu. How can you have 10 courses in an hour and 45 minutes? So there's not kind of a one-size-fits-all approach to this. For the majority of restaurateurs, they'll be able to turn tables, so that's a bit of a plus. The 11:30 closing time mightn't suit gastropubs, and unfortunately people won't be able to sit back and enjoy, you know, a sociable drink after hours. So, after the 11:30. So it is quite difficult to get it right, but again, our focus, we need to get people back indoors June 2nd. That's where we're going with this, and we'll do everything we have with the guidelines that you just mentioned, and we'll do everything self.
And whatever about, we'll say, indoor dining, and certainly all the restrictions that are around the logistics of operating that, pre-booked time-limited slots must also be in place for customers. And you mentioned 105 minutes duration plus 15 minutes to allow for adequate cleaning. 105 minutes, that's 1 hour 45 minutes. I'm not sure if I ever went out for a meal that I like to be told, you know, I have to be in and out in an hour and 45 minutes. It certainly compromises the experience. And possibly you have to also deal with the idea as to whether people are prepared to go back into congregated settings, Mark.
I think there'll be an initial mush, so to speak, for people to get out and want to dine and want to socialise. There's another point there. So if there's 2 metres between tables, there's actually no mitigation on time. So it's only if there's 1 meter is where that rule comes into play. So if the place has a big enough venue, then they'll be able to space out their tables accordingly and make sure that they'll have a certain amount of tables allocated for a longer time slot if needs be. So there is a lot of logistics around the whole thing. But hopefully by the end of the summer now, this should be behind us and we'll be ready to go back and back to the way it was. Hopefully in some way, shape or form, we can get everybody re-employed, get the wheels of the economy turning again, and get the tourism and hospitality industry back to its best.
Notwithstanding the threat of variants and stuff like that, and I just wonder about this whole concept of outdoor dining, which has been, you know, promoted everywhere in that, and I have images of Turkey, Greece, Lanzarote maybe, and how lovely to be outdoors. In fact, nobody wants to be indoors. Given our weather here, that'll be a real hostage to fortune in regards to whether outdoor dining works or not. But anyway, we have to go with what we have. Let's see how that unfolds. So there is light at the end of the tunnel. Hopefully it's not the COVID train. It doesn't seem to be as we move on, particularly for a near 200,000 workers, owners, proprietors, everyone in the whole restaurant, hotel and hospitality industry generally, including B&Bs, we're not forgetting them. President of the Restaurant Association of Ireland, Mark McGowan. Thank you, Mark. It's the first time for you on the programme. We hope to have you back again.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Bye now.
Indeed. Good morning to you.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Hello to Bradley Armstrong, who's just texted to say, enjoying the show on a beautiful morning. Thank you for that. We're pleased that you are. Caroline Dixon, I know you requested a song there, Chris, or Caroline. I just won't have time to fit another song. One is about the quota on any morning, but thanks for getting in touch and for listening. Morning, Clem. We have two major problems in Ireland, says Sean in Athy. All these people looking for more creches. Why don't one of the family parents stay at home so they would not need for as many of them? Sean, it's not as simple as that. When I was growing up, says Sean, families were bigger and no creches were needed. Also, there's no one running the country. All right, whatever you say in regards to that one, Sean. Thanks very much. And a new kettle with a difference. So something that's coming in on the email there. Kildare people with restricted mobility, disabilities or limited strength will find it easier to make a cup of tea from now on, thanks to a new kettle which has been launched on the Irish market. Indeed. Well, we'll see. Maybe they'd like to do a bit of advertising about that. The kettle was developed in Australia by three people, including an Irishman, Dara Lynch, and it's now arrived in the Irish market. I'm not sure what's different about the kettle, except I'm told that it originated coming from an idea of somebody who had arthritis. Maybe I'll try and find a picture of this kettle somewhere and we'll see what it looks like and how it might help. Owen.
Yeah, joining me on the line now, Clem, is Roisin Davis. She's a counsellor on the male advice line at the Men's Development Network. Roisin, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Great to be on, thank you.
Just before we talk about the advice line in particular, the Men's Development Network, who are you and what do you do?
Okay, so the Men's Development Network is a charity. It's based in Waterford, although some of our services are nationwide. You mentioned the male advice line there, so that is nationwide, a phone service. But the Men's Development Network was set up with a focus of, I guess, the well-being and improved mental health of men. So there are a number of services we offer. There's a counselling service, anger management. There's also, it's called MEND. It's a perpetrator programme for male perpetrators of domestic abuse. We're active in the White Ribbon campaign, so that's helping to end male violence against women. And also there is the Male Advice Line, which offers support and advice to male victims of domestic abuse. So we work both ends, if you like. We work with the male perpetrators of domestic abuse, and on the Male Advice Line, we work with male victims of domestic abuse.
I have to say, it's very impressive, the work that you do, because I was having a glance on your website, and also I read through your annual report from 2019. So on first look, it's not just about the likes of domestic violence or coercive control. You have a wide range of topics and programs that you touched on there, such as just men's general health and also that White Ribbon campaign.
Yeah, that's right. It is far-reaching. There's other services, for example, working with parents and children. So we reach out as well to work with, for example, on the Choices program that I work on as a facilitator. There's also partner support there, so the women also and children have an opportunity to talk about what's going on with them. So there's counselling services available to them and play therapy for children. So it is very wide-reaching. But Owen, just for the sake of your listeners, if I could give a broad definition maybe of what domestic abuse is, because a lot of people tend to think that they think of domestic abuse as purely the physical. And just to give a definition of that domestic abuse it's a pattern or it's a cycle of abusive behaviour. So it can be physical, sexual, emotional, psychological or financial. And I'll go into that maybe a little bit more in detail later on. But just to give you an idea of what we're talking about. So within Ireland, and these figures come from the National Crime Agency, we know that 15% of women suffer domestic abuse and 6% of men. And we're talking about, you know, severe domestic abuse here. And these are only the figures that we are aware of. Obviously, you know, the numbers are in actual fact much higher than that, most probably. But that gives you an idea of the extent of the abuse. And, you know, men, although the numbers are high, and I would stress that against women, the numbers are much, much greater than they are of men, and it tends to be severe against women as well. So when you think about it, you know, a man always has a weapon in his fist, for example, so the risks against women are far greater, and the safety of women and children is paramount for us. But having said that, you know, men, all men deserve to be safe in their own homes as well. And in actual fact, you know, the Gardaí, courts, social services all have a duty to provide services to all people, whatever their gender, because often we will get a call on the male advice line, and a lot of men aren't even aware that they can call the Gardaí in the case of emergency. They fear they won't be taken seriously. So it's important to point that out.
And the male advice line at the Men's Development Network, I believe, has seen a significant increase in the number of callers recently, especially in men over the age of 60. And I was taken aback by that figure and by the age cohort. And I was speaking to one of your colleagues yesterday who said that, you know, men of that age may not be aware of the different forms of domestic abuse, such as coercive control.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. And that's just it. At the centre of all abuse, as I say, it's like it's a pattern or it's a cycle, but at the centre of that is a controlling behaviour, so the need to control someone else's life. And very often that's just not apparent, and especially if you've been living with that as a lifetime, it becomes just a routine. It's just your life. There's nothing unusual or strange about it, except that it's there, it's present. You're living with something, you don't feel right, but you can't always name exactly what it is. And of course, sadly, we have a culture in Ireland of men not expressing emotions, and you know, that's something we aim to change, to allow men to feel that, look, it's safe to open up, it's safe to talk about what's going on for you. And, you know, it's important to sort of change that mindset and to look at that.
Well, that's an interesting point, because we've covered the topic of domestic abuse on the programme, you know, for years and years and years. We'd have many people talking on the issue, and, you know, we do tend to focus on women and the abuse that women suffer. And I want to say as well that the way we look at it is, anybody who suffers some form of abuse, whether it be financial, physical, sexual, emotional, should always seek support. But it always seems to be that men are a little bit more hesitant or slower to reach out and ask for that help.
That's right. And it may just be on that they just don't realise that it is what it is.
Hmm.
And they don't know the signs, per se. So anything just in terms of the person you're calling you names, insulting you, putting you down, and preventing you from, that's a big one that we experience, being isolated. So preventing you from seeing friends or family, or even having activities or doing things that bring you any pleasure. So feeling isolated and cut off, that is one big sign for us that domestic abuse is going on. Trying to control everything, even how you spend money, where you go, even down to what you wear, acting jealous or possessive, or constantly accusing you maybe of being unfaithful. And it's far-reaching. And the thing is, it is hard to define at the beginning. It's hard to even realise what's going on, because it's not something that, obviously, if you went on a first date with somebody and they started behaving that way, you'd go, oh, I'm going to give that person a wide berth, you know, there's something not quite right here. But it's a bit sinister, and often you can be lured into, it's you and me against the world almost, and the relationships tend to accelerate very quickly.
Yeah. Can I ask you, Roisin, sorry for coming across you there, can I ask, how are you funded at the Men's Development Network? Do you receive government funding, or do you rely heavily on donations?
Okay, so it's different funding streams. So COSC and TUSLA, so the Male Advice Line is funded by TUSLA, and they're doing extensive research, you know, based on our data.
Okay, and just to give out the details then, Roisin, of that Male Advice Line for anyone who might want to reach out and get help?
Sure, okay. So the number of the Male Advice Line, and as I say, this is nationwide, is 1-800-816-588. I'll just repeat that. 1-800-816-588. And the lines are open Monday and Wednesday 10 to 6, Tuesday and Thursday 12 to 8, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, 2 to 6. So we have long opening hours there. And okay. Just to reassure anyone who's been listening or feels that, you know, they might be experiencing domestic violence, domestic abuse, to give us a call. It's completely non-judgmental, confidential, and we will listen to you, support you and advise you, give other support agencies and contacts that you can, that will help you further.
That number again, 1800 816 588, and Roisin Davis is a counsellor on the male advice line at the Men's Development Network. Roisin, great to talk to you, and continued success and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Owen. Good to talk to you too. Take care.
Indeed, very, very important work. And can I give out those couple of other numbers as well, by the way, that we frequently give out here? Men's Aid is 01-554-3811. Women's Aid, 1-800-341-941, just if you're in any difficulty in regards to any of these. And Chuck Thierman in Kildare Town is a women's refuge, 045-527-584. Kira.
Thank you, Clem. I am joined now by Thomas O'Connor. He's the IFA chairman for Kildare West Wicklow. Good morning, Thomas, and thanks for the time.
Kira, and good morning to all the listeners out there.
Thomas, yourselves at the IFA and the RSA have teamed up and you're issuing a road safety appeal for this time of year in terms of silage season.
Yeah, that's right, Kira. Just with the, hopefully with the increased or better weather that's coming, we're hoping that all road users will practice or share the road safely together. Just with the unsettled spell of weather, silage has been delayed, and over the next 2 or 3 days you're going to see a huge increase in activity of silage making machines on the road, tractors and all agricultural equipment, and we're just calling on all users to show a bit of patience and that we all work or use the roads safely together.
Now, the president of the IFA, Tim Cullinan, did note that drivers of farming machinery, they obviously need to be very careful and expect the unexpected, as do all road users. But he added that it's an ever-changing environment, especially due to the pandemic. We know there's so many more people, once the sunshine was out yesterday, walking the roads, running. There's a lot of kids out there. Obviously, they have their balls and things like that can be kicked out to the, onto the road. And a lot of people have recently purchased pets and dogs, and they can also be a hazard, obviously, for those driving the machinery. It's something that needs to be noted, Thomas.
Definitely, and even a simple thing, Kira, like even the last 2 weeks, we can look at the countryside and see how much more it's greened. But that impacts on a person, a farmer coming through a gateway, on his ability to see. And he's nudging that he has to go that little bit further onto the road for a bit of visibility. So it's exactly what you said, expect the unexpected. And it's for all road users. And we just need to work together. I think last year there was 4 fatalities on Kildare Roads. And the agricultural community doesn't want to be involved in any one of those. So we just all hope that we work together and a bit of patience for road users in cars or lorries, etc. And a little bit, and for pedestrians and cyclists that they stand into the side. And we'll all work together. And we'll also be urging for farmers that if it's safe to do so, to pull in and let the traffic pass.
So, Thomas, is the advice, would say, for cyclists on a narrow country road and that doesn't have much of a hard shoulder, is to pull in out of the way for a tractor?
Well, with the size of modern day machinery, it's very hard for people with a, you take a tractor and trailer with a full load. On some of the smaller country roads, it's nearly the full weight of the road. So there's no choice. But for if a tractor can pull in, it will. But 9 times out of 10, we'll be calling on a pedestrian or a cyclist. If it's safe for them to do so, then we'd appreciate if they could do it.
Now, you mentioned the delay on silage season, obviously to do with the wet weather. And I think it's about 2 weeks you need for the silage to fully dry. Will that mean that there might be a push out now and there'll be even more activity later into the summer due to the delays?
Yeah, if you take the difference between this time last year, we were probably coming to the end of silage season. But the way this year has pushed on, we've had a cold spring and a dry spring, and that's had a negative effect on grass growth. The silage is not going to be as compact as it was last year, and it's going to be pushed out for longer.
Well, Thomas O'Connor, thank you for joining me, the Kildare West Wicklow IFA chairman.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ciara, and indeed thanks, Thomas. And I'm pleased to hear Thomas say there that advice to the farming community. Definitely, that's very sound advice to all of us who use the roads. Beware of that very, very big farming machinery. But one of the bugbears with people over the years has been somebody chugging along in a tractor, and I don't say that in a disrespectful sense, but gathering up traffic behind them and not moving in just to let the traffic off, and then everybody gets less frustrated and everybody takes more care of what's happening. So well done, Thomas O'Connor, on that particular appeal to farmers as well, to consider just pulling over at times and letting the queue pass by. Chairman of the Kildare West Wicklow IFA. Now, after the break, we're going to be talking about the threat of hornets arriving in this country, wiping out our own very valuable native bee population, and the weekly COVID quiz with Ciara and Owen. You can test your knowledge against them. All of that between now and 11.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, WhatsApp of the day has just come in from Bill. He says, Clem, now that we have a spider called after Ciara, you might be in a better position to put your foot down. I think that's great, actually. Thank you, Bill. And we were talking about the spider named after... Oh, yeah. I'll definitely put the foot down. We were talking earlier in the morning about the spider, this spider that's called the false widow spider, sinking its venomous fangs into people all over Ireland. And indeed, Ciara Noble has venomous fangs as well in regards to that. Irish scientists discovering that a bite from one of the nation's most common spiders can result in a hospitalisation. The study is from NUI Galway. Now, it's extremely serious because some victims have experienced tremors, reduced or elevated blood pressure, nausea and impaired mobility, while in rare instances, victims have developed minor wounds at the bite site or had to be treated for severe bacterial infections. But it's called the Noble False Widow because it's similar to the actual Black Widow spider, but it's not the Black Widow, the Noble False Widow. And now that it's named after our Ciara, I will, Bill, put the foot down in regards to that. And actually, on that note, let's give a big welcome to the PRO of the Irish Beekeepers Association, Colette O'Connell. Good morning, Colette.
Good morning, Clem. And after those few comments, I'll be watching over your shoulder for years to come with one of those spiders after you.
Don't tell me now, as one who's so beloved of bees and bees beloved of you, that you're terrified of spiders as well, are you?
Not at all.
No. But I'll tell you one thing. If any of us meet the Noble False Widow, we'll be giving it a very wide berth indeed. All I can imagine now is that there's people all over Ireland checking out the floor, the corners, and particularly when they lift the bedclothes. I'm not sure half of Kildare or Leinster will go to sleep in peace tonight. But we have another kind of alert, because whatever about the Noble False Widow, this was new to me, the Asian hornet, a threat to our native bee population.
It's a threat to, a big, serious threat to honeybees, but it's also a serious threat to other pollinating insects, which are under enough pressure as it is. We all know about the All-Ireland Pollinator Initiative to do what we can to help our solitary bees, our bumblebees, our honeybees, all these beneficial insects that we need to pollinate our crops and our food. This could be the straw that breaks the camel's back if it gets in here, and we've already had one close one already.
Now, we covered Biodiversity Week last week here. We had Bridget Loughlin, Kildare Heritage Officer, on the line. We were talking about 10 ways to help our pollinators. I'll remind people of those again this week. We're in what's called Invasive Species Awareness Week. So tell me a little more about this Asian hornet.
Well, you'd actually have to respect this insect because it's quite successful at moving and establishing itself in areas where it's not native. So I'll give you the example of what's happened in France and right around Europe now as a result. In 2004, we had one fertilised Asian hornet queen came into France, into the port of Bordeaux, in a consignment of Chinese pottery. And we now know that that queen, the one queen, is responsible for establishing all the colonies that are the thousands of Asian hornet colonies right throughout France, Spain, Portugal, parts of Italy and Germany.
Oh, she was a lively lady, wasn't she?
Well, this is what, like, they're a very, very successful predator. They're what we call an apex predator. They're at the top, and their native environment has a very wide-ranging climatic conditions. So lots of us would have thought, oh, sure, look, they'll never survive in good old rainy Ireland. But this insect will, if it gets established, and that's what we're asking people to watch out for, to watch out for the insect and to alert the powers that be immediately if they see it. What I will say is, what we're concerned about is that people don't mistakenly think that other good hornets or wood wasps are this Asian hornet, because the one good identifying way of identifying this hornet is it's sometimes called the yellow-legged hornet, and the bottom half of the legs are yellow.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it actually now, and they prefer to live in low mountains and forests, commonly known as Japanese giant hornet. It's the world's largest hornet, got in here in fruit. Just one queen in France is responsible for tens of thousands of hornet nests around the various countries. That is quite incredible
amount of
reproduction, yeah. Colette.
Yeah, now, you see, what happens is, when the queen comes, it's very like our wasps. She'll start a small nest herself, and they'll put these wasps anywhere. John de Carteret from the Jersey Action Group, just recently, his most recent queen was removed from somebody's lounge, and he's been really, really good at advising the Irish Beekeepers Association and, you know, telling us, you know, to try and keep them out before they come in, because what Jersey is doing now is just catching them. They're there. But we in Ireland are at the great position that they haven't come in yet. They're not established. So basically,
are we sure about that, though?
Well, this is what we're watching. But yeah. The thing with them is, the queen will actually build a primary nest, right? And then as that grows, they'll move on to a secondary nest. And if that secondary nest is allowed to reach its natural end of life, end of season life, they will throw out 200 to 300 queens for the following season. And that's where that's the problem.
200 to 300?
100 queens for the following season. They'll go into hibernation over the winter, and they'll come out, and there's where the problem lies. So we need to catch the queens before, you know, when they make the primary nest, or get the secondary nest before they release those queens.
And in the report that I came across, which brought my attention to this last week, by Alan O'Keefe in The Independent, in which you were quoted, there was a rather gruesome description of how these hornets attack our own native bees.
Yes,
that they can actually hijack them in flight. They break off the head and the wings and the legs, and they bring the body back to their nest.
Yeah, well, I mean, any predator will do that. I mean,
right.
Nature is cruel. So look, I mean, as I said, they have to be respected. They're impressive, right? But they're not they're out of their habitat. They're right in their own habitat. And as I said, pollinators themselves are under enough pressure. With the honeybees, what happens is you've got different stages of life of the honeybee. So you've got the foragers that come out of the hive to forage for food for the newborn bees that are coming, the younger bees. So what happens with these Asian hornets is, if they find one, if they find a hive, they'll bring their friends, the rest of the nest, there to the source of food, and they'll catch the foragers as they go out. And then what will happen is the hive, the colony of bees, will weaken, and then the hornets will get access into the hive as well.
And destroy the bees.
And they'll destroy the bees. And they'll actually, I mean, bumblebees are at risk. All the good, beneficial, John de Carteret actually told Alan O'Keefe in the Independent, the spiders are a risk as well. They'll eat anything, you know. It's protein for their young, you know.
All right, it's quite incredible. And just to reiterate to people again, in case there's still anybody out there who doesn't understand, we've done this dozens of times in the programme with various pollinator representatives and advocates. If our bees die out, not just in Ireland, worldwide, then we have a food problem, because the bees pollinate our crops, which allows them to grow and fertilise and everything else.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the importance. So yeah. just to finally say to everybody, keep an eye out, just in case. Now, don't overreact by swatting everything that comes in your
grass. Exactly.
You will see if these hornets are easily recognisable, quite big, but particularly look out for them wearing four yellow socks. And that's the best way I can put it.
Six yellow socks.
Six yellow socks, okay. Keeping good and warm. So they have...
I've actually given some emails there, and there's a fact sheet with photographs on it. I sent them through to Owen. So if you want to put them up on your website, and if anybody wants to check out irishbeekeepers.ie,
We certainly will put them up on our website. We will, because we're very fond of the bees here and we're really into biodiversity. So you can give me that address again you gave.
I've sent it through there.
For the Irish Beekeepers.
Irish Beekeepers Association. And look, they can contact Irish Beekeepers, contact at irishbeekeepersassociation.com or PRO. PRO is the best one. That's my email. PRO at irishbeekeepers.com. By Irish Beekeepers Association, sorry. And there's also swarms.ie. Steve is running that. If anybody sees a swarm, if they contact swarms.ie, he'll get their nearest beekeeper out to take the swarm, and he'll actually be able to tell them where to go if they spot a
home. All right. irishbeekeepersassociation.com, biodiversity.ie. Just Google it, Facebook it, whatever. Yes. We need to kick on the hornet with the
National Parks Wildlife. I mean, we've actually asked for an Asian Hornet hotline to be set up,
okay,
so that people can be advised and stuff. But look, there's lots of people out there willing to help.
All right,
okay?
We do.
And in Kildare, you have two great beekeeping associations, the North Kildare Beekeepers Association and the South Kildare Beekeepers Association, and any of them will be able to point your listeners to the right
All right,
place.
Great stuff indeed. And look out for this hornet with the six yellow socks. That's how you know the bottom of his legs are yellow, because we need to protect our bees. PRO of the Irish Beekeepers Association, Colette O'Connell. Thank you indeed, Colette, and we'll put all that information up on our website later.
It's been a pure pleasure. Thank you so much, Clem.
You
Bye.
Too. Okay, then, we're back for the COVID quiz.
The COVID quiz. The week that was. On Kildare's KFM.
Okay, Clem, you have to stamp that out, says James, right, in regards to whatever. And would anybody know someone who would hang a duvet out of a bedroom window, or why they would? I presume to dry it, Mary. Okay, lads, here we go. We have 4 minutes for the Express COVID quiz. Not so much COVID, general knowledge quiz. So we're going to start with, let's see who I'll start with this week. I'll start with Ciara Noble, the widow spider and that. Okay. What woman has the most monuments erected to her, Ciara?
Mary, Mother of Jesus?
Correct. That's one for Ciara. Owen Beattie, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Right. In Fools and Horses, where do Del Boy and Rodney live?
Where did they live?
Come on, stop wasting time now.
Is it the Mandela House?
Yes, it is, the Mandela House.
The Mandela House, yeah.
None of your delaying tactics or diving in the penalty area now, please. Ciara Noble, what or who are gynophobics afraid of? GYNOPHOBICS.
Okay, that would lead me to think about gynecologists, but...
Oh, God.
Afraid of women?
Yes, it is.
Oh.
It's a fear of women.
So that's what you have.
Yes, it's called gynophobia. Historians say the term arose to define the fear men experience of being humiliated by women. Now...
You definitely are gynophobic.
There you have it. And all because of you, I might add, by the way. Now, Owen Beattie, only one US state and its capital share the same name.
I told you this the other day, Owen Beattie.
You did. Oklahoma.
Correct.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have told him, Ciara.
We were talking about politics.
All right, Ciara, here's one for you. Horse racing. Why was this famous jockey named Polyfilla?
Oh.
Is that the question?
That's the question. This is for Ciara. This famous jockey.
Is that Pat Eddery or something?
It is.
Wasn't he like small and he could get through things, like areas easy? I don't know.
Pat Eddery.
Hold on a second now. I suspect someone has seen my quiz here. Right. Has seen my question.
No, my granddad was like obsessed with Pat Eddery. That's how I know.
Oh, right. Well, you got the right answer.
Never heard of Pat Eddery.
Wasn't he like, he could go through small areas or something?
Yeah, Owen, stop making a show of yourself, will you? Pat Eddery is one of our greatest jockeys.
Apologies.
Right. He was called Polyfilla because he went through the narrowest of cracks. Right. In which sport, Owen, would you find a bullpen?
Bull racing? What do you call that?
No, wrong. Sorry.
You know, where you get on the back of the bull?
I have to take your first answer. You're wrong. Kira, a bonus question for you.
Well, I actually know this because it's American sport. It's baseball.
Correct, Kira. Kira is now leading 1, 2, 3, 4, 2.
There you go.
And she gets the next question, Kira. If the population of China walked past you in single file, why would the line never end?
Oh, they have a lot of children. Well, there's a lot of people in China, so obviously they have a lot of children.
You saw this quiz, definitely. It's because of the rate of reproduction. Come on, confess.
What's going on here?
I didn't see this quiz.
All right, okay.
But is that right? Because it obviously it's like there's like over a billion people in China.
Yeah. The line would never end because of the rate of reproduction. Owen, in what aspect of sleep are humans unique?
No idea.
No idea.
Kira, no idea.
In what aspect of sleep are humans unique?
They close their eyes? I don't know. No, that's not unique, actually. No. I don't know.
We're the only species that sleep on our back.
That's not true. My dog used to sleep on his back.
Your dog needs therapy. Okay, a counselling.
My dog's
Yeah, but Clem, we've just proved that your question is completely false.
Okay, you didn't.
That's fake news. So we both have dogs, or have had dogs that sleep on their back. So right. What are you going to do about that?
You'd say, I'm not going to
do that. We're going to have to report you to the BAI.
Okay, right. And no wonder I have gynophobia, right? A fear of women, lads, for those of you who want to know, you can turn to your partner, to your wife, and say, have I gynophobia? Have you caused me to give me that? Right. Now, last two questions. Who's next?
Me.
Right, you again.
Yes.
What are the most used and underused letters in the English alphabet?
Okay, well, the most used must be a vowel. I'm thinking either E or A.
Just pick one now, please. Quick.
E.
Correct.
And the least used letter, is that what you said?
Yes.
Q?
Actually, no, it's Q. Z.
I thought. It would have been Z.
It's Z. I was going to pass it over half a question, or half an answer there. And Owen, on the same, by the way, the least used letter is Z. So Owen, this one is for you. Final question. Aside from smell, what is unique about our nose?
It keeps growing the whole way, like, through your life.
It keeps growing the whole way through your life.
Do your ears not do that as well, no?
Yeah, I think they your do. Ears your ears keep growing as well. Yeah,
but I asked you about your nose, not your ears.
I know, and I answered it.
Yeah. There was
and he gave you added information. So really, you should
just
be in awe.
Just broadening your knowledge, Clement.
1, 2, 3. I'm disqualifying the two of you, actually. I'm not going to declare a winner or anything else. Right?
Why?
For what?
All right, Kira. Because the two of you, definitely. I explained to listeners. When I came in this morning, I found a quiz shoved under my door. That's because I printed it off at 6 o'clock last night. She's outside roaring laughing. The two bloody chancers.
And lads, Clem's the biggest gobshite. He put the wrong answer for E and Q. He said E and Q instead of E and Z. Yeah. Look at your quiz sheet.
And I came in this. I went off home because I was doing it late, left it on the printer, and then came in this morning and found it under my door and said...
And Clem, I said to Owen, I was like, Owen, you're lying really badly. Owen's supposed to be a good liar. And he was like, no. And Clem believed me this morning when I was like, no, like, right. I never saw it.
I've now declared a quiz null and void. You two chances, you, after the telling.
Did you think for a minute, like, Janie, she knows a lot of random
I
stuff.
Knew that they didn't know that anyway. You're disqualified, the two of you. You're sent off a red card. Okay, I'm not even going to thank them for their contribution to the show this morning. We'll do it all again tomorrow morning from 9. John Dunn is up next with the 11 to 2 show, so stay tuned for that. Lots of great music on the way. Kira Plunkett will be along with the main news at 1 o'clock and again at 2 with Kildare Focus. I hope our producer will be a lot more honest on that show than the two of them have been this morning. Let's go to the newsroom now and Kira Plunkett.